Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Chelsea from the James Group in Pottstown, PA.
Hey everyone, I'm Chelsea. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Chelsea.
My sobriety date is July 29th, 2018. I have a little over 3 years now. My home group is the James Group in Pottstown. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I also sponsor women within this program. I guess I'll start with the beginning, how it was. I grew up in a pretty normal family, a loving home. Both of my parents love each other. There was no yelling, no fighting. We grew up in a very, I grew up in a very religious home. I was brought up Christian, which I have nothing against at all. But there was a lot of fear within the teachings. And so when I was growing up, I was almost instilled with fear, fear of disobeying, fear of not being good enough, fear of thinking a bad thought, doing something bad. So, and I tended to always be bad. Like, I was just the kid that was never good. I could never be good. And so growing up with those beliefs was a little bit hard, especially since it was, you know, something that was a belief to be good. It just felt very hard for me. But to continue, I grew up with a great family. There was nothing wrong. I was never, like, mistreated or anything. My parents aren't alcoholics. They aren't addicts. So the reason I say that is because, you know, alcoholism, it doesn't discriminate. It is very much a disease that I 110% believe I was born with. I remember growing up and always feeling like the odd one out, and no one ever, you know, made me feel that way. It was just this, like, innate feeling that I had, that I was being talked about, or that I was just, like, this weird girl, and I just always had, like, a poor me attitude, I guess. And I always felt, like, backward. I don't know, there was always just, like, this isolating thing that I had. And I feel like when I think about my childhood, I do remember it to be a bit, like, depressing. And I was, like, always anxious. And again, there was nothing really that really caused it. It was just kind of how, I mean, I guess part of it would be being raised in, I think a lot of it had to do with the beliefs that I was raised with. It was just always a negative kind of attitude toward myself, because I couldn't do what was good and what was holy or whatever. Anyhow, I'll continue. So I grew up, nothing bad really happened, I would say, until we moved from Northeast up to the suburbs, and that was, like, a huge change for me, and again made me feel isolated and alone, and starting this new school. And so I started, and I just kept myself away from everyone. I was very just, like, a to myself kind of person, and the anxiety and the depression grew. And I would say that what first developed in my life was an eating disorder, because that was the first time that I had felt this, like, good feeling that I wanted to keep having, like, chasing after. And that was in, like, seventh grade. And I mention this because I do believe a lot of women in Alcoholics Anonymous struggle with this. With our bodies, when we're not drinking, we might focus on our bodies, we might focus on men, or even just with anyone, really. I don't wanna just keep that to women, but we can tend to replace things. that vice or that muse, I guess. I don't know. But that was like my first taste of something, of out of my body, of getting away from myself, my mind, and who I was. I was able to change my body, you know, and when everything else was out of control, I could control what I ate and what I looked like. So that was like my first time, I would say, with like an addictive personality type of thing. And it wasn't until about ninth grade, I would say I was like 14, 15, that I picked up my first drink, and I can say that I remember this so vividly, because it was with, the first time was with a bunch of friends in high school, and they had finally invited me out because I had, let me take that back. It was with my cousins down in Philly, and I remember I didn't eat, and I drank a Monster, and I drank on an empty stomach, and that first sip was exactly like what they talk about in the big book, that like sigh of relief, like, you know, like a vacation from myself, from my mind, from my body, and I can finally be the girl I wanted to be. And I know we hear that a lot in AA, and even when I came in and read those words in the big book, I felt like somebody had been watching me. And that was an amazing thing for me, because I truly felt alone, and I wasn't aware of what I had as far as alcoholism yet. And so I chased that sigh of relief, because I had lived with it for so long. There was always this thing, this heavy burden I was holding. And once I took that first sip, it went away, it melted away. I could be that fun girl, I could be the funny life of the party, the one who was brave, not scared, not shy, not introverted, but extroverted, and I could be all the things that I couldn't when I wasn't drinking. And so I would look forward to every weekend being able to drink and getting it any way that I could. And I remember in high school, some girl was talking about getting together to drink, and they found out that I drank. And we got together and we drank, and I felt cool because it was the cool girls that invited me, you know? And I could be that fun girl. I could finally be not the weird girl, quiet girl at school. I could be the fun girl that I wanted people to see. I was just too scared to be those things without a drink. And that's where it started for me. It was an escape. It was like therapy. Not therapy, sorry. It was an escape. It just felt good. It felt like that sigh of relief, and I enjoyed it. I had fun. I made friends, and there were more people who drank than didn't. And so you were able to make friends pretty easily. And, you know, once I was drinking around them, they wanted to be around me more. And, you know, this continued, and I was like the first out of my friends to drink as well. And, I think the first time I got caught drinking was with an underage in the park. So this doesn't tell you how like desperate I was to just drink. I don't know. Well, it was a pavilion at like in the suburbs, right next to a baseball field, and we parked our cars right at the baseball field and just like walked to the pavilion and just drank. It was like this, just drank. Wasn't any games, there wasn't anything, we were just trying to get as messed up as we could. And, you know, the cops pulled up and I got in trouble, and that was the first time, that my parents, I guess, could confirm that I was drinking the way that I was, because I was really sneaky, I was really manipulative, I was so, like, even if they tried to hint at me drinking, I was this grumpy brat that you just couldn't talk to. And so anyhow, I got in trouble. I had to do community service, a little bit of that, and some AA classes. It wasn't like the AA here, though. It was like a court-ordered AA, and there was no steps. There wasn't solutions. It was kind of this guy who just talked about how he did drugs and where it got him, and we all just kind of sat around and talked about the funny stories, you know, our war stories, and we thought it was fun, and I think if anything, we all just found more people to drink and drug with. After that, I was grounded for a bit, and I could say that this was the first time that I really tried to do something a little bit different. But I know I wasn't fully committed to that, to giving up drinking. But in my attempt to, I was like, maybe I should give church a try and God a try. And I went to church, and I remember I still just didn't feel a part of. It just wasn't me. Like, I cursed, and I, you know, made dirty jokes, and church was not about that. And the girls were different, and I just didn't feel like I could be me. Like, and so that was something I wasn't really into, but I was able to connect with some other girls that were from church, but they were like me, you know? And so we really, really connected, and I was able to stay sober for about 9 months, off of friends and being grounded, I guess you could say. My parents were like extra watching me at that point, but it was, June 11th or 10th, 2011, and my best friend that I had made friends with during this time, died in a drowning accident, and that day I knew what to do. I called up a friend and I got drunk. I drank so much. I remember I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. I woke up with puffy eyes, and that summer was really dark because I worked all day and I drank all night, and that's what I did to survive. It was the only thing I knew how to do in a situation like that. I didn't feel good. What makes these feelings go away? Drinking does. I drank. It was a really dark, dark summer for me, and I, you know, made friends with drinking buddies, and that's how they coped as well, and so that's what we did together. Say that it wasn't until it wasn't until maybe my, like, after junior year of high school going into senior year, I had come to this point where I was like, I need to stop drinking. And so I tried again to stop drinking, and this time, you know, I had like this connection with God. I really truly felt seen by God during this time. And again, this wasn't with AA. Neither of these two times getting sober was with AA. Quite yet. And, so the second time, I had this connection. So I knew God was real. I knew He hadn't, like, abandoned me or anything like that that I had thought for so long. And I want to say this because I think this is important. I felt like God had abandoned me or didn't like me because I had lost my grandma. And then a year after that, I lost my grandfather. And both of them were traumatic because I had to watch my grandma die from cancer and my grandpa, you know, they just like disintegrate in front of you, when they're on chemo, and it's hard to watch. And, during the last few months of his life, he had a stroke, and so he couldn't talk to us, and it was not easy to be able to not look at my grandfather during his last few months of living. And I felt like, why does God hate me? You know, like, why? Like, why does this keep happening to me? And shortly after that is when I got caught with my underage, and then I tried to make friends and connect with God because I'd seen people connect with God and their lives are so peaceful, right? And I wanted that. I wanted peace. The whole time I wanted peace. And when I made those friends, and I, you know, my friend passed away, I was like, why? Like, why? Here I am trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to do what you want me to do, God. And like, why would you do this? And so drinking felt like that best buddy that like never like betrayed me. Like, whereas I felt like God did. You know what I mean? Like, alcohol was there to do what it needed, and God just like never did what I wanted Him to do. So, and those are hard things to wrap your head around. They're not easy. And so, you know, I had a hard time with God, and it was during the second time getting sober, on my own that I had this connection where I was like, you know what, okay, like, I know God loves me. It doesn't really feel like it all the time, but I know that there's, like, this love that I can't understand. anywho, so during this time, I stayed sober for another 9 months. Weird, 9 months seems to be my, like, number, I guess. And during that time, I had lost a bunch of weight yet again, so I put down the drink, but I picked up not eating and exercising, and so that became my next drug. There, like, and here's the difference here. I got sober on my own, and I removed what I used before, and I filled it with another thing, and so it was just as miserable, if not more miserable. And during that time, I actually ended up not missing my senior year, like 2 weeks of my senior year of college, high school, because I was in bed crying. I was depressed. I was running off of no food, and my brain was, like, fried, and I remember just, like, I guess, like, trigger warning, sorry, but, like, making myself throw up, and, like, as I was doing it, I was like, why don't I want to be doing this? And it was like I was doing it against my will, but I had no other option. Like, I had to do it, and it was so hard. And I remember telling my parents, like, because I can make it look so good. I can make it seem like I have it all together, and I didn't. I was like, I don't want to be alive. You need to help me, or else I'm going to, like, kill myself. Like, I said that, and I was not okay. And so it took a lot of begging. Like, my parents really didn't believe that I was that bad. But I was, in my mind, my internal, like, thoughts and feelings were just, like, so bad. It's so hard to describe unless you know. And I think most of you might know what that feels like. And so that's when I got help with a counselor and at the time a nutritionist, and it was also suggested that I get on medication, which I had never done before. And it was during this time that I started college all while this was happening, and it was hard, but I was doing a bit better, and the medicine was definitely helping. And I started seeing this psychiatrist, and I want to tell this story out of my truth. I have a hard time sharing it just because I don't really know why I have a hard time sharing it, but I think it's important for other women to know. I went to see the psychiatrist, and at first things were going well, but as the sessions went on, he started to sexually assault me, and it was really hard because I was working on myself. I was doing this hard thing, right? Like, I was being vulnerable. I was trying to heal, and this guy is just taking advantage of me. And at first, I didn't even know what he was doing was wrong. But once I told my counselor, she was like, what in the world? We need to report him ASAP. And so I said, no, I don't want to do it. I'll stop going to him, but I can't. There was, like, nothing in me. There was, like, I was so empty. I was so empty. And stopped going to him, and a few weeks later, we saw him on the news. It was crazy. You know, he got arrested for sexually assaulting a 14-year-old, and so this just goes again to say, like, I kept getting hit with, like, these things when I was trying to do the right thing, like, to just, like, get better, and, like, it just felt like this impossible task, and that God was against me, and somehow during this, I had enough of a connection with God to be like, I know this wasn't what you wanted, you know, like, I know this was just somebody being the person that you, like, you didn't want them to be this, but this is what they chose, and I was on the other end of it, you know, and thank God I had that perspective, because I don't know what would have happened. And I know a lot of women experience sexual assault in different ways, and I want to be able to say that, like, you can work through it, you can use it to help others, and I've definitely been able to show up for other women in this area where only I can understand. And it's been what I thought was the worst thing that ever happened to me became a blessing to be able to bless other people with. And you know, we ended up going to court, and I sat in court, and we sent him to jail, which was awesome. Still feels like a different life. I don't even feel like that was me. And that's PTSD and just like disassociating from that part of my life. But I digress, sorry. So at this point, I'm still drinking. I'm drinking even more because, like, why bother? I keep trying and nothing's working. And, you know, everything's going against me and whatnot. And so, this was where I just kind of gave up. I actually, like, came to this point where I was like, God, you know, he really doesn't love me. And I kind of became like an atheist of sorts. Like, maybe it's an agnostic. I knew God was there, but he wasn't for me because this wasn't working. And I wasn't getting what everyone else was getting, no matter how hard I tried. And so, drinking, this is where, like, all the while, I'm drinking. I'm drinking, and when I'm not drinking, I'm using guys, or I'm active in an eating disorder, and then when that stops, I pick up a drink again. And so this second time, I pick up a drink because I actually convinced myself that if I could go 9 months without it, then I'm fine. You know, I can probably drink regularly, which, if you take a second and think about the fact that I had that thought in general, means I'm an alcoholic. Like, if I was like, awesome, now I can, like, drink regularly. Like, no. You already want it so much. Like, it won't work. So, once I picked up, I tried to do a bit of controlled drinking, which was, like, once a month. That once a month happened never. I drank the next weekend, and it started with like vodka, and then I would switch to like gin, and it would be rum, believe it or not, whiskey. I would do whatever I could to drink, and there was even at one point I was on depression meds, and you know, they're like, you can't drink on that, so you just be careful. And I remember I still drank. I would take it, and I would still drink. I'd black out, and even the scariness of blacking, which is scary. You wake up and you're like, what? I don't remember doing that. Whatever. Next week I'm doing the same thing. And I remember vividly this time I was drinking with my best friend and her boyfriend and another friend of mine, and which we did every weekend. This is our friend of us. Our friend of ours had an apartment we always were able to drink at, and that was what happened every weekend, and I loved it. Loved it. I lived for the weekend. I was a zombie during the week. I survived. I guess I should hone in more on what it was like internally. It was surviving. You just get through the day, you get through the week to get to the weekend so you can get hammered Friday, Saturday, and Sunday if you can pull it off. And then you recoup, and I survive Monday through Friday to get to Friday, Saturday, and get as messed up as I can. And sometimes I wouldn't even leave that long. It became like a Wednesday, Thursday, let's go down to the city. Let's get messed up. And this is just how my life went on for so long. And towards the end, this is where I started. I went from this happy drunk, and then I started, I'm sorry, I was this person, a crying drunk. And then I got to be a mad drunk, and I was not a mad person. And this is where I'll say, like, we were driving in the car with my friend, my best friend, and I got so mad that I punched her while she was driving, and I punched her boyfriend, and I woke up the next day, and I was, like, fully aware of what I did, and I had this conflicting feeling of, like, that wasn't me. But that was me. Like, I did that. I was the person who did that, but that wasn't me. I wanted to say that that wasn't me, but at the same time, I was like, that was me. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys, but, like, it was such a conflicting thing for me because I couldn't make excuses for myself. I was like, I did that. And that was like one of the first times I was like, I'm so sorry I did that. And, you know, I don't know why I do it, and I don't know how to stop. And, you know, that was the first time I contemplated not drinking ever again, because I hadn't, who that was somebody I had never seen in myself, and it was scary. Like, that's a scary feeling. And, but that didn't stop me. I tried again to control drink. My friends would always be like, why can't you just have like one drink an hour? Like, just put on a timer. And I would put on a timer, and I would be sitting there, and within like the next 5 minutes, I'm like, I can't sit here for another hour without a drink. And I'd be like five drinks in, and then, you know, the card's open and I'm buying shots and I'm messed up, forget my card at the bar, have to go there the next day, and gosh, it was a mess. And I hurt everyone, I hurt my family, I hurt my best friends. It was miserable, and I couldn't control it. It was something that was completely like, I would even sign, and I'm only telling this to just kind of like, you know, be relatable, but I'm gonna be the designated driver tonight, okay? Like, that's how I'm not gonna drink. Like, I'm gonna say that I'm the designated driver, and we would get out, and I would be hammered within 15 minutes, and they'd be like, yeah, we figured you weren't gonna be the designated driver. And, I never was. I never was. I would even, like, buy an Uber and just buy an Uber back the next day to get my car if I had. Like, whatever I had to do to just be drunk. Like, I just needed to be drunk. I needed it. And it was, I was never, I just survived. It was survival. I never felt like I could, I never saw myself living past like 25, if I'm being honest. I just never had, I never wanted to. And what brought me to AA is I had a boyfriend, and always when I had like a boyfriend, the drinking was like a little bit less, but it was still something that I completely relied on. And I think that's because you just replace the addiction with something else, and the guys were easy for me. They're easy. You know, I can, you know, be who you need me to be. I can, you know, do whatever you want. You know, do whatever you want. I can do this for you, that for you. Like, it was easy, and I was super codependent, and it's just how I functioned. And so I had this boyfriend. I really thought I was going to marry him, and it didn't go that way. He broke up with me, broke my heart. It was really rough, really rough. I didn't see how things were going to go. I really wanted to get back with them, and it wasn't happening. And it was during those next 2-3 months that I went out and I drank, and it just didn't feel as good as it used to. Like, it just was, like, empty, and I remember going out and saying that I wouldn't drink, and I would, and it was just becoming, I came to this point, and I know it's a gift of desperation, but I just, like, couldn't do it anymore. I was driving. I'd seen a friend on Instagram who I went to high school with, and he was a party animal. I mean, this guy was crazy. He was known to be, like, into drugs and known to be into partying. And he was like, I'm sober now, and blah, blah, blah. And I remember being like, whoa, this guy is sober. And I reached out, and I asked him what he was doing, and he was going to a rehab. And he was like, hey, you can check it. It wasn't a rehab, sorry. It was an outpatient NIOP. Okay, and it was called Summit down in Doylestown. It's no longer open, but it saved my life. And so my friend Vince, he invited me, and I went. And on my way there, I remember feeling, like, scared. Like, the cold feet, like, oh, my God, I'm really about to do this. Do I want to do this? I don't think I want to do this. I need to do this. Like, that type of thought process in my head. And I remember the street, I remember the light I was stopped at, and I remember thinking to myself, I have tried So I tried counseling, I tried medicine, I tried working out, I tried eating healthy, I tried the Bible, I tried church people, I tried it all. And the one thing, I'm telling you this is God because this thought, I remember being shocked that I had the thought, you know what I mean? Like, what? Where did that come from? And it was like, but you've never, ever given up drinking. Never. Like, I would always do those things in coinciding with drinking because I was always young and this is just what young people do. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to live the next 23 years of my life if it's going to be like the first 23. I can't do it. And so in essence, I was saying, like, I don't want to be alive. I didn't want to kill myself. But I just didn't want to be alive. Like, I really wouldn't have been sad if I didn't wake up. Do you know what I mean? Like, that type of, like, no drive, nothing. Like, empty. And I was like, just do something different. And I was saying this before I knew what AA was, before I knew all the lingo and the things that you say in AA. I was saying, okay, I just gotta do something different. And so what did I do? I did something different, and I drove to that IOP, and I sat in it, and I talked. Never did I talk, ever. And the next week, I showed up, and I did something different, and I talked. And I talked about the things I didn't want to, and I talked about the things that make me cringe. And I kept showing up when I didn't want to, even though I had other things to do. When I wanted to drink, I did something different. You know, I prayed. So this time around, I really dug into, like, God. And for me, I did dive into the Bible. I have to be honest. That's my truth. Okay. And, all during this, like, first 4 months with an IOP and getting sober and, like, diving into the Bible and, like, there was this one common message that kept popping out at me. And you can giggle at it. That's fine. Cause even I was like, what the hell? But it was like, expect this miracle. Like, always expect a miracle. You know, wait for the miracle to happen. That's what I was like learning during those first 4 months. And like, I know that it was God. Like, God gave me that thought of desperation, that do something different for me to cross paths with Vince, to go to that IOP, to sit in those meetings and talk to people who could relate to me. I didn't feel lonely anymore. I was like, wow, that person felt that way too. Oh, they thought those effed up things. And so it was those first 4 months in IOP, and then a friend invited me to AA. And this is funny, and I have to add it because somebody was like, have you ever thought of doing AA? And I was like, what's AA? And they were like, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I legitimately said, I'm not an alcoholic. I just have a drinking problem. Are you kidding me? And I hesitated to go to AA meetings, and somebody said you should get a sponsor, and I said that sounds like not something I want to do. And I mean, I really, at this point, 4 months in, I thought I had it together. So us alcoholics, even when we, like, at first, like, might be all willing, but you know, self-will comes back in, and I was like, I don't need a sponsor. I don't even know what that is. I'm not an alcoholic. Okay, I'm doing pretty great right now. But what brought me into AA was my desire to have friends, because I knew what always brought me back out were friends. I had friends who drank, who could drink successfully. That's the thing. I couldn't, but they could. And I always went out and I tried, I never could. I always ended up being the party pooper, the one who made things terrible. People who, you know, like, gotta go take care of Chelsea. Chelsea got angry, started screaming, and blah, 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 gotta leave. And so I was like, I know I need to do something different, and I'll make some sober friends. And so I went to this AA meeting, didn't really want to go, you know, almost backed out, you know, we have commitment issues. Like, hey, I'll be there. 5 minutes before, you're like, my aunt actually called, and I like can't make it for some reason. Some excuse. Really good at that. But anyway, I made it, and I sat down, and I remember walking in and seeing all these young people, and I sat down and I looked up and I saw this plaque that said expect a miracle. And I was like, what the hell? And then I turned to my right and it said expect a miracle. And to my left, and that's a miracle. And even though I didn't think I was an alcoholic and I didn't really want to be in AA. I knew that God, because I had that connection with God, God wanted me to be there. And that's all I needed to know. And I was like, okay, I'll keep coming back. And this was before I knew all the cliche things. Like, and for me, that's what solidified God being in my life. And so I walk into this meeting, I go back in, and I raise my hand to get, well, let me say this. There's a few meetings where I didn't ask for a sponsor. I still thought I could do it on my own. But then, you know, things got a little bit dry, and I was miserable. And I was like, okay, raise my hand. And I remember this girl, she came all running over to me. And she was like, I'll be your sponsor. And I was like, cool, sounds good. And at this point, I was super willing. I wanted my life to be different. And I was on that motto of, I need to do something different. And this is a super different. And I remember reading those steps and being like, I don't know what they mean, but I'm here. Someone told me to get a sponsor, and I guess I'm going to do it. And so we met up, and we did. Let's go through these steps together. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. I had already came to that decision when I woke up and I was like, I just can't do this anymore. I don't want to live anymore. You know, and I knew that the one thing I didn't give up was alcohol and that my life was completely unmanageable. I knew these things. And when I went to the IOP, that was my proclamation of that, essentially. And then two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number two, it was a little bit easy. Like I said, I grew up Christian, so I knew that there was a God out there. We had some issues. We had some beef. I didn't trust God. I realized that. I came into AA, and I was like, yeah, I know there's a God, but I don't trust him to take care of me, you know, to do what is good for me. Because I had always associated God with these, like, terrible things, like losing people, and just, like, every time I try to do something right, something wrong happens. And it wasn't until, like, these things happening and seeing the Expect a Miracle was enough for me to be like, he sees me. God, whoever he is, he sees me and he cares about me. And so then I was a little bit more willing to forget everything I think I know about God or was raised on and be willing to see God differently than I had ever seen him. And that was a little bit easier for me than it is for some other people, but that's just my truth. And I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as we understood him. It was very evident for me when somebody said that I was driving and God was in the passenger seat and I was making the decisions for myself, and when things went wrong, I was blaming God instead of letting God drive and me drive the passenger. And I was like, dang, I don't know how to do that, but I want to try. And I remember I broke it down to, like, every minute. Like, okay, what does God want me to do in this minute? What does he want me to do in this hour? What does he want me to do in this day? And just literally taking it step by step, like, one day at a time, like it says. Like, these things are cliches for a reason. And, like I said, it was so much more powerful to me because these things were happening in my everyday life before I even walked into an AA meeting. And then when I saw all the steps, and that God had practically walked me through the steps, and that this program is the steps to God. And that's exactly what he did. He showed up in my life, and he was like, hey, let's walk this way. And then he brought me to people who could bring me closer to him and keep this going. Because, yeah, I tried to get sober before, but I never stayed sober because I didn't do these steps. And I promise you, handling whatever, swear to God, these steps work. And so I gave my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood him, and I tried to follow him in every minute, every hour, every day. What do you want me to do? How do you want me to be today? Four, I made a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. This was a hard one. Everyone always kind of makes a big deal out of this. I didn't quite understand it the first time I went through it, I'll be honest. We did the fears, we did resentment and harms done. But I also did a sex ideal, and the first time I did the sex ideal, believe it or not, was what was really eye-opening for me, because I had this, like, glorious view of myself. I'm just such a great girl, and I'm so nice, and I'm, like, the sweetest, like, whatever. And when I did this this inventory, I realized I was manipulative. I always approached a situation like, how can I, and I always share this too, and it might sound terrible, but guess what? Like, it's not true. I would walk into a party and I'd be like, I'm going to get that guy because he's hot, and if I can get him, that means I'm hot. Or this even, I'm going to go after that guy because he's not quite in my league, but like, I'll just grace him with my presence. Ew. Like, can we, like, that took like brutal honesty, that thought that I had. And I realized I was selfish to the core. I was and I came out of the situation like, he just was so horrible to me, or like, as if he deserved it. Like, that guy was a human being too. Like, God loves him. Why did I just treat him like trash? You know what I mean? Like, it took some serious looking in the mirror and just being honest with the nasty, like, selfish, gross thoughts that we have. Like, and as I went through the second time, and this one was eye-opening because I had seen from the beginning of my life, I had a situation where a girl made me feel less than. And so anytime, like, that resentment, like, formed every resentment after. Like, there is, and that's the point of an inventory, is, like, being brutally honest about, like, maybe the first time somebody hurt you, your resentments, it could be silly. I mean, it could be silly. And we have these resentments that are silly on a daily basis. And they usually come from a place that they've been, like, before. Like, somebody doesn't make you feel good enough. There's a pretty girl. I hate her because she's pretty. Or just, I'm trying to think, like, I had resentment against my dad because he just, like, never loved me the way that I wanted him to. And he just always made me feel not good enough. And I had a resentment against my cousins because I always felt less than them. And I had, like, these crazy resentments against girls just because, like I said, they were pretty. Or just, like, I determined that they were better than me. And so, therefore, I hated them for that. And I wish I could go into more depth there, but, like, a fourth step is eye-opening. It's, like, looking at yourself in the mirror and just being honest with the nasty thoughts that you have and your side of things. And the fifth step is where we admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And we tell these people, we tell our sponsors out loud these terrible thoughts, and most of the time, guess what? They're going to say, been there, had that thought. You're normal. You're a normal alcoholic. You know, it's people always make the fourth and fifth step scary. It's not, man. You got to embrace it. Be willing. You know, it's freeing. It's freeing to see the patterns in your life and where they formed and how they continue to form in your life. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects. And defects were, I'm the victim, poor me, manipulation, guilting people into doing what you want them to do. Being controlling. God, I'm control freak. Like, it doesn't even have to be of a person. It just has to be, like, of my, like, things don't go the way I want them to. And, we don't always want to give up these defects. Sometimes they're, like, what we've learned to survive on. But we have to become willing that God remove them. Because that's what brings us closer to Him. And seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, may a list of all persons be unharmed. First time I went through this, I did all the easy ones. I was like, yeah, I can't wait to say sorry to that girl. And be best buds again, and can't wait to say sorry to her. I know she'll, you know, take this well, and blah, blah, blah. I did all the easy ones, and I quickly got miserable. It was a total second time where I did an amends with my dad, and that was a deep-seated resentment, okay? Like, that was one that, like, controlled my life. I had always resented my dad for being who he was. Loud, obnoxious, closed-minded. I resented him because I never felt like I can measure up, and he always wanted me to be somebody that I wasn't, and I just, like, anytime he talked, I would cringe, you know, like that type of resentment, just like, And it wasn't until this is where, like, God really works, because I had never seen it this way. But I actually had gotten, like, I was praying for the willingness to want to make amends to my dad. Because that was one thing when I walked in and somebody, I remember at a meeting, they were like, you know, I made this amends to this person that I never wanted to make amends to, and my life's been great. And I was like, if you think that I'm making an amends to my dad, you're funny. And I did. And I had come to this place where I had realized that I had expected my dad to be somebody he never was. So the very thing that I was mad at him for, I was doing to him. And he would always try to love me, and I would almost always say, it's not enough, get away from me. And I realized that as an alcoholic, and this was after also working with another alcoholic, you'd be surprised, of like realizing like you're trying to help and love on this person, and they're just like, and that's how I made it for my dad. And I just had this like overwhelming sorrow of just like this feeling of like rejection that I gave my dad. Ow, like if you let yourself feel it, it like has to hurt. And I sat down with my dad, and it was hard. I mean, it wasn't easy to do these things, but and I told him what I did. And I said, I had these expectations of you, and they weren't fair. And I rejected you, and try not to say sorry, but I rejected you, and I just want to know, is there a way that I can make this better? And of course, my dad was loving, and he loves that, like, my life's changed, and to be honest with you, after that, there was such a weight lifted. Like, I could hug my dad. I never wanted to hug my dad before. Now I can hug my dad. Even if he says something cringe, I'm like, whatever, it's my dad. And a big part of that is acceptance, man. There was a big part of my life that I didn't accept. There's in the big book, it's like page 417, like, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. You know, most of my problems are rooted from me fighting, whether it's like a situation, people, things going on in my life. I'm fighting it. I'm thinking that it should be different than it is, but acceptance. You accept it. It's the answer to all your problems, you know? Accept that the things are the way they are right now, and you might not know why, but there's a reason for it, and you have to trust God. And so that was something where I was like, I accepted that my dad was the way that he was, and I'm able to love him. And I never thought that I would have a first dance with my dad at my wedding day. I never wanted it. I was like, I remember being like, I'm not having one. And I danced with my dad, and he cried, and I cried. And I hated when my dad cried. I was like, I was so mean, man. You know, and I made that amends, and it freed me. I was able to love others and accept others, and not only that, but what you learn in these steps is, like, as you accept others, you accept yourself, and you find yourself being kinder to yourself, and because you're being kinder to yourself, you're being kinder to others, and so on and so forth. And so I made the amends, and 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were all properly admitted, this is a big one, it's one I still struggle with today. It's taking that daily inventory, because if you don't take that daily inventory, the resentments stack up, and you'll feel it. You'll feel, you know, irritable, discontented. You'll be mad at everyone, you know, and that's when you know I'm not doing my daily inventory. I have to. It's something you have to do, you know, and so, I try to keep up on that. It's not always easy, but it is, like, everything they say in the program, it works. And you just have to, like, shove your ego down a little bit and take it. Like, take it for what it is and believe people and just be willing to do the work, even if it's, like, so silly, but sometimes it's really hard to call your sponsor. Why is it so hard to call your sponsor? Because you don't really want to hear the truth, but you need to hear it. And so, just do it. Like, a lot of the work sometimes can feel like nails on a chalkboard. Like, I really don't want to freaking do it. Like, I just don't want to do it. Do it anyway. And it always works. I don't know why I'm never surprised when somebody's like, well, how have you been doing your daily inventory? And I'm like, I don't know, but like, ugh. You know, and I do it and I'm like, wow, I feel so much better. I'm so much nicer to my husband and my friends and everyone. You know, like I'm not as resentful and I can be loving and caring and who God wants me to be and show up. And we don't always want to show up, but you have to do it anyway. You know? And so 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood and praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. It's so, so good. It's a hard one. Prayer and meditation. Nobody likes to sit still for more than a minute. I know I don't, but it's so important because that's where you realize where am I running on self-will? Am I trusting, am I accepting what is, what God has for me today? Or am I fighting it thinking I know better? Am I trying to force people to do what I want them to do? Or am I letting God do the work? I just need to show up one day at a time and be the person that God wants me to be. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice this principle in all of our affairs. We want to carry this. And I know when I have the experience in the fourth step and making amends and the amount of freedom and happiness I have after that, I wanted to share the message. And at first I didn't. I'll tell you what, when somebody said, all right, now you're going to go and be a sponsor, I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I don't. And that's almost perfect. Because the more I get in the way, the less God can show up and be the God that He is for me. You know, like stop trusting in yourself. Just show up, read the book with somebody, take them through the steps the same way you are. Be honest. Don't pretend like you have it figured out. Cause that's one thing I try to do. I struggle. I'm not perfect. Progress, not perfection. You know, like I don't always get it right. I get resentments. Sometimes I act sick or dry or whatever as they call it. Sometimes that's just our reality. We're not perfect, but you gotta show up, and you gotta try, and you gotta let God show up, you know? He always shows up, you know? So, I guess that's all I have, and I know I went a little bit off track there, but I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.